Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have got a jam-packed, fun show today. It's so exciting to have a whole lot of great people on to talk to, and the first one I have is Angela Pingle. Her website is Cut to Pieces, and there she shares all kinds of really great tutorials. She has the quilts that she's had published, and she is all about encouraging and giving tips for quilting. I first met Angela by the internet when she was in the Moda Bake Shop Sliced competition, where she happened to come out as the winner. I was one of the judges, and it was a super exciting event. So I'm really excited to have her come on and tell us about what's going on in Angela's world. So nice to meet you, Angela.
Hi, Pat. Nice to meet you as well. Thanks for having me.
So I was really interested in what you think about quilting online. is it fun for you? Is that exciting? You know, what made you decide to sort of be out there with your work?
Well, let's see. I think quilting online is the new up-and-coming way to do it, I suppose, and it is particularly helpful for someone like me, because I do not have a lot of people near me, physically near me, who are interested in quilting, enjoy fabric, all the things that you look for in a fellow quilting friend. So I started getting involved in online quilting through Flickr initially and did a lot of bees and swaps.
Oh, okay.
And from there, yeah.
You know, Flickr is really interesting because that has a place where you can build community and share photos.
Absolutely. And the community was a big part of what I really needed and continue to still need, the interaction and the affirmation of people, people who want to see what you're making and are interested in the fabric that you like.
Right, right. I know. It's like even if you find somebody local, they may have a totally different style than you. And, you know, so it's fun to be able to be online and find the people halfway across the world who like the same thing you do.
Yes. And it's very fun when you start getting packages in the mail from all over the world. My husband still hasn't gotten over that novelty. I think I got something from China last week and he was very amazed.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, so were you doing a swap or you just sort of traded some things?
Yeah, I do swaps and I've cut back a little bit just because of other commitments, but I still really try to stay involved in doing that.
So tell me, how did you, or why really, why did you decide to build a blog rather than just stay in like public communities where you could be on a forum or the Flickr group? What made you decide to actually start blogging about your quilt adventures?
Well, I really wanted to start documenting everything for myself, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I found that the mix of having both the photography and the words to describe what I wanted to say, what my thought process was, to just have that for myself, actually. And I didn't really anticipate that too many people would be interested. I thought maybe the people I was going to be with or a swap with would like that. And somehow along the way, other people decided they wanted to hear what I had to say. And so that's been fun.
That is fun. I mean, I think there are so many ways people and why people blog. I never tire of hearing. It's like, why do people quilt? It's the same thing. There's just all different reasons that you're fulfilling. You have some really interesting thoughts about why you love being in swaps, even though you may not, you know, I think everybody ebbs and flows with them. You do them and then you back off because they're a lot of work, but they're so much fun. Yeah. Tell me about what appeals to swaps for you.
Well, I've always taken a swap as the opportunity to really create something amazing and precious for the person that I have. They're usually anonymous swaps or secret swaps where the person doesn't know who's creating for them, and then I in turn would not know who's creating something for me. There's a fun surprise there that everybody gets, and you kind of build anticipation and hope that maybe somebody's making something for you. And I just really, I love to see someone's joy develop when they see what might be made for them. And I have that knowledge, obviously, of who I'm making for, so I can watch for their reaction in particular. But I really just feel like we all could use a little extra love, and it's important to create something for someone that would be really something they will treasure forever. So, and just, yeah, outdo one another in generosity in terms of creating beautiful things.
It is a lot of fun to find that special fabric, you know, that they like, or the little goodie that you put in when you send it. Even just like picking the card that you put along with it. Isn't that just like the best stuff?
Oh, I love it. And yeah, the little fabrics that, you know, that you throw in that's extra, that you know is your favorite designer. And yeah, I really like just telling a story for them with what I create. So everybody's got their own story, and I just want to be a part of that for a little minute.
You know, I also think, Angela, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's like the best present ever when it comes, your swap. No matter what, it's the best.
Oh, yes. There's nothing like having someone understand and know that was my favorite designer, and they got it, and they understood that it was that shade and that colorway that I wanted and not that other one. And there's something very fun about
that. Yeah, only like a quilter that you're connected to can really get that. This it's not something your family normally gets. You know, they just it's just not there. So we were talking, you know, Angela, about what you like to do in quilt making, what some of your favorite stuff is. And you said right now you're working a lot with curves. Tell me a bit about that.
Yes, I am. I've actually done an intense amount of work with curves. I recently am in the process of finishing up a book on that. It's in the editing phase currently. So I feel like I've sewn thousands of them at this point.
Oh, congratulations. That's exciting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is exciting. It's still in the unreal phase because it's not out yet, but I keep waiting for it to pop up on Amazon. Let's see, I really love curves because I feel like they're just the next step from straight line piecing. You take, you know, it's just amazing to me that you can create all these graphic, beautiful designs from curved pieces, and that they're really not that difficult to do once you sort of sit down and tackle it and realize that it might take you just a little bit longer, but that the end result is definitely worth it.
I think it's one of those parts of quilt making that lots of people never do experience. I mean, they just, maybe they've had one little attempt at it and it didn't go well. So, you know, they just bag it, but it is very fulfilling when it comes out gorgeous.
Oh yes. And I think that, I have a particular method that I use for sewing the curved pieces together, which I think creates, a more perfect piece, which for the most part, most of us are happier when our things come out looking how we wanted them to, and it makes us more inclined to try it again. So I think the methods, hopefully, people will find helpful, and just, you know, the sheer amount of different aesthetic options in the book will be appealing to people too, I think.
Yeah, so that's going to be all in your book called, tell us the name and who it's with.
Oh, sure. It's called A Quilter's Mixology through Interweave Press, and that'll be out in the spring.
In the spring. Oh, spring 2014. So,
correct.
Exciting. So do you like, you know, will you be tired of curves now that once your book is done?
It's pretty hard to come up sometimes. I still have a whole bunch of designs, you know, the ones that you thought about or didn't make into the book, or, you know, saved for yourself for a separate pattern another time. And I actually just taught a class for Sewing Summit on curved sewing as well. And I was like, oh, I have to do curves again. I can do this. So even I have to gear myself up sometimes, but I think it's because I just did a lot of them. So in a very short amount of time, that's the other part.
You could take a little curve break now. You know,
I'll do a little straight line sewing myself.
So I do have to ask you about the slice competition real quick before we're done. Was that really fun, or did it get a little stressful? Because you had a lot to do. You had to keep creating designs like week after week.
Yes. I think it was both. It was fun. I knew going into it, it would be stressful. I looked at it as my own personal sort of project runway, where I had, a challenge each week and had to, it was difficult because we had to come up with our own patterns. We had to provide our own fabric. We had to do our own photography, and then we had to submit that and then sit on your hands and wait for someone to tell you what they thought and didn't have any idea what your competition was doing. So it was even more difficult perhaps than a reality TV show in that you're just, creating blind. So I didn't know whether to step up a design based on my competition or, everybody's doing this, I can back down. So you just had to, I'm an overachiever type, so I just had to push.
Well, I think they're just amazing. There's been a few of these through the internet in the past couple of years, due to, I think, Project Runway just sort of fueling the idea. And they're always so amazing. You guys are so, really on top of it. When you get it going, you do it. I mean, it's, great designs.
Yeah. I mean, I still look back on what I created during that time, and I'm like, okay, that was good, hard to believe I came up with that in that amount of time. Like, you basically have a day to design, and then you've got to start sewing because that thing needs to get made.
Right. And it's amazing what you can accomplish without massive amounts of time when you're motivated and you're sort of in the mindset.
Right. And your husband's doing all the childcare for you, and so I'm extremely thankful for that. And we were moving at the time. It was especially stressful, actually.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, Angela. Yeah. Well, this has been so fun to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I want everybody to go out and visit Angela at cut2pieces.blogspot.com. Look for her new book and go hang out and tell her hello on her blog. So thanks so much, Angela.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.
We'll be back right after this break to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest
to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am so excited to have Corey Yoder here. She is the designer behind Little Miss Shabby. It's a website where you're going to find all kinds of really super fun things. She's also a Moda Bake Shop contributor. She has wonderful tutorials, and she creates lots of patterns for some of the different fabric companies like P&B and RJR. And I just thought it'd be really fun to have Corey come on and talk a little bit about what's going on in her world. And this is exciting. So welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much for having me on.
Let me get a little backstory on you. How did you discover quilting?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story when I look back. I grew up in a family of quilt makers. My mom made quilts. My grandma made quilts. In fact, both of my grandparents would have made quilts on both sides of my family.
Oh, wow.
I was just never into it growing up at all. I didn't sew at all. Didn't touch a sewing machine. And then after I got married, which would have been about 16 years ago, I started buying fabric before I ever even knew how to sew or knew what to do with the fabric. I just loved the fabric. So I started buying fabric, and then, of course, making quilts made a lot of sense to me since I have it in my background. So I started making quilts. I did that for a few years, and then my daughter was born, my oldest daughter. And I went from working full-time to being a full-time stay-at-home mom. So at that point in time, I got away a little bit from the quilts, and I started making clothing for her. Not necessarily making the clothing, but doing a lot of applique on the clothing. Mm-hmm. I found that when I was making quilts, I enjoyed applique in quilts, and it just translated right over into the clothing. So I started making clothing for her. And then that turned into a business, which is where the name Little Miss Shabby comes from. That was the that was the name of my clothing.
Clothing.
Yes,
cool.
Children's clothing. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of applique things that I would do for her. Applique on jeans or applique on shirts. And then it turned into doing that for other people. And I did that for several years. And then my second daughter was born. And I decided to kind of do a change of pace. And I went back into quilts. And I started designing quilts, and I really enjoy that process of quilt design. And so that's where things headed when she was born.
You know, I just think it's wonderful that you love applique, because I love applique. So, you know, I always connect with everybody who has that that feeling. You know, why don't you first tell me, you know, about what kind of applique method do you like to use? What is your favorite method?
You know, I've tried a lot of different methods, but I tend to go back to a fusible web applique, and then I finish the stitching on my machine, oftentimes with a blanket stitch. Sometimes I'll leave it a little more raw with a straight stitch. But and when I was doing the children's clothing, I did a lot of satin stitching for those.
Oh, but okay.
On quilts, I tend to stick with a blanket stitch. It's a nice, clean finish, but the fusible web is so quick when you have kids, and I'm always looking for quick ways to do things, so that works out well for me.
Yeah, I like that method, too, and it looks really nice. I mean, sometimes people don't realize how beautiful it can actually be. When they get up close, they're like, really, this is raw edge? But yeah, your threads cover it, so.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. You're absolutely right.
Now, one of the things that you do on your website, littlemissshabby.com, is a lot of sort of sew-alongs and bees and different things like that. Can you tell me a little bit about some of those projects? Because there are some really adorable things.
Sure. I just finished up some sew-alongs in September on my blog. I did a rainbow row-along, which was a strip quilt that I did that used all of solids. And that was actually a quilt for my youngest daughter, Eleni. She has been wanting me to make her a quilt for her bed, and I thought, well, as I'm making this, I'm just going to share it along for all of my readers. Mm. So that was a 12-week row-along for that quilt.
And so when you say, like, row-along, do people have to buy a pattern for you, or were you just giving them the pattern and they made their own thing?
The patterns were all free on my blog.
How nice.
I just listed the instructions right there on my blog, and mm-hmm. then they could follow along if they wanted to. And when I do row-alongs or quilt-alongs or what have you, I leave that information up on my blog. So you never have to feel rushed or that you have to do it at any certain time. The information mm-hmm. is there, and you can jump in whenever it fits into your schedule.
So how did you like working with the solids?
I really enjoy them. I use the Art Gallery Pure Element solids for her mm-hmm. quilt, and I really like the colors that that Art Gallery has for their solids, so I really enjoy working with them. I do work a lot with solids, and there are a lot of great solids out there.
Oh, fun. You know, another one that I saw on your site, if you could talk about it. I know it's not a current one, but it's so, so adorable, the Birdie Stitches.
Yes, Birdie Stitches was a year-long block of the month that I offered on my blog, and that was an embroidery along. So every month we would have an embroidery block, and for those I would have the PDF pattern linked on the post for those, so you could just download that and then easily transfer that onto your block. And it was January through December, and each month the theme for the month went with whatever was going on that month. So, for mm-hmm. example, in January, it would have had a little birdie with a snowman, and mm-hmm. in February, we did little Valentine's birdies, and then it went the whole month that way with the embroidery.
Yeah, they're really, really cute. And you even had a Flickr group that you people
yes.
made all these variations.
There were so many blocks in there. It's a lot of fun for me to look through and see what fabrics people chose with those, mm-hmm. and there were some red work ones and just a variety of different ones, and they still pop up in there. If I go in there on any given day, there's always new birdie stitcheries going on in there.
Yeah, we just can't get enough of cute little things. I think
embroidery is really, really popular right now, and there's a lot of people taking that up, so I think it's neat.
Now, you are a Moda Bake Shop contributor, and you have some really adorable projects out there. And modabakeshop.com is where people can go and find patterns that designers have put out. They're free. So I love your Organic Elements quilt. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Mm-hmm. That quilt was done using one of the warm solids jelly rolls and then, of course, some yardage for the background. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty easy quilt to make. The piecing is easy, and then it features applique in the shape of little leaves or little petals on those pieced blocks. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a modern traditional design. You have the traditional piecing, and then I think the applique adds just a little bit of fun modern element to it. And it's, again, done using the fusible web and then, of course, the machine applique. So it comes together pretty quickly. And it's nice, too, because it doesn't have a lot of applique on. So if you just want to try it out and see what you think, it's a good kind of beginner project for applique, I would say.
I think you're right, Corey. I think it's an excellent beginner one because there's not a lot of heavy piecing to it, and the mm-hmm. applique is nice and simple so that
right.
people can – and you, your step-outs are gorgeous. You did a beautiful job.
Thank you.
And you also have some amazing quilting on there, which
yes,
you show.
Angela Walters did my quilting on that quilt, which is why it's so amazing. She does a fantastic job. I always love getting my quilts back from her.
Yeah, it's just really, really cool. I like it. And I like that you were able to show the, on the background. You mm-hmm. flip the quilt, rather, so that you can see the quilting.
Right, yes.
So you have a little thing coming out, something new. It's called a book.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about that.
So tell me about it.
The book is called Playful Petals, and it is with CNC Publishing, with Stash, and it'll be coming out in the spring on April 1st, and it's my first book, and it is a book on applique, and it's a very simple, user-friendly approach to applique. I'm sure that you have heard just as many times as I have heard that applique is too hard. I could never applique, and that's just really not the case. So I think it's a really user-friendly, fun approach to applique.
That's really wonderful because we can't have too many applique books, I don't think.
I know. And they're all different.
They are.
And different approaches to it, different mm-hmm. fabrics. There's just a wealth of information, I feel, in any book on applique that you pick up. And they're always so helpful. And I'm pretty excited about having one too.
Are you going to have like step outs in the book to show somebody who's never appliqued how to go about doing Fusible?
Yeah, there's a lot of good information in there, and it's pretty basic, but at the same time, I think the quill patterns are interesting enough, and with piecing and applique, that even for more advanced quilt makers, I think it'll be interesting to them too. But it definitely is a very easy approach that a beginner who has never done any sort of applique should be able to pick up the book and be well on their way to creating something that they can be proud of.
You know, and also, Corey, you know, sometimes people who do know how to applique, you just want to make something simpler or quicker, you know, just to be satisfied. You know, you just want to have that satisfaction. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You don't always want to make a Baltimore album quilt every day.
Yes.
That's
yes. And one of the things I've incorporated in the book, too, is I have 18 patterns. 9 of those are quilts, and then 9 of them are pillows based on the quilt pattern.
Oh.
So that way, if you want to just try it, or if you want a quick project, you can do that with the pillow.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Pillows are awesome because you can, you know, just get that instant satisfaction to
Absolutely.
Have a small project. So I have an ending question for you. That's always fun. When you go to like a quilt show, or just when you're looking on the internet, what kind of quilts are you personally drawn to? What catches your attention?
Well, right now I am really enjoying the medallion quilts that are becoming so popular. There's a lot of really neat ones out there. I have the pattern of Jen Kingwell's Midnight at the Oasis quilt, and that is one that's definitely on my list to make. That one catches my eye every time I see it. So I do want to make that one. And I also, Lone Star quilts have really been catching my eye. I saw a beautiful vintage Lone Star quilt in solids. It was white and then bright solids. And ever since I saw that one, I thought, man, I have got to make one of those. So that's another one that's on my list, too.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. Yeah, I'd like to see that one. Holy cow.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so you're going to start tonight, right?
Right, I should. I don't know that I will.
Right. Well, Corey, this has been wonderful to have you on the show and share what you do. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thanks again. Everybody, chatting with you.
Everybody can visit Corey at littlemissshabby.com, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. Label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are talking about Stash RX with Jennifer Keltner. Jennifer, this is so exciting because people love to learn how to use what they have and use those sort of big Princeton odd prints and things we don't know what to do with.
Exactly. Well, another thing that we talked about in this class with Weeks was how to mix together geometrics and florals. I mean, as quilters, I think, you know, a quilt of all florals, no problem. If it's all about graphic prints, that's a piece of cake. But what happens if you want to put your florals and your stripes in the same quilt? And I describe that as sort of the deer in the headlights look. When weeks pulled the next few pieces out of my stash, she had three florals that I didn't think looked like they could go together at all, mm-hmm. and a couple of pretty bold stripes that I had collected. And again, they were fabrics I loved, but I just hadn't found anything to go with them. So she pulled this group of five out, and I honestly looked at it and thought, there is no way these things are going into a quilt together.
Challenge.
Exactly. And what she said when she looked at this group was that it was all about bridging. So think about interior designers. As a rule of thumb, if you're an interior designer and you add a color into a room once, they recommend that you should have that color appear twice more to complete the look. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this lesson was about. When you have these things that are disparate from one another, if you bridge them and add those same colors in other fabrics, you can make it go together. And so there's a great sort of little timeline of fabrics, if you will, all laid out in a photo in this section where you can see how you make that bridge and how you add, so there was a gold fabric in there and you bridge to a darker value of gold by finding one that has not just one shade but two in it. Or there was sort of an unusual shade of green and it got picked up in another fabric. So it's about repeating those colors.
You know, the stripes are another thing that some people love, like me. You know, I collect stripes.
Right.
And then other people just totally avoid. Did she have any thoughts on the stripe,
She's pretty deliberate. She and Bill and the quilts they do for Modern Quilt Studio are pretty deliberate about placement of stripes. And again, I think this is a personal preference. Mm-hmm. Some people use stripes and they go every which way. And other people, when they cut their pieces, are very deliberate. They want the stripes all running in one direction. The other tip I've picked up over the years from people who are a little bit hesitant to use stripes is that you get to decide what the right side of the fabric is. And maybe the stripe is a little bit less contrasty on the wrong side of the fabric. And so they'll flip it around and use the wrong side as the right side in their quilt to sort of lessen it. And I've seen it used very successfully there as an applique background, too. So,
oh, that's a great tip.
Another great idea.
Turning it over. Now, you know, sometimes we end up with some leftovers. Imagine that.
Right. We bought more than we might have thought, or we were going to make a king size and we ended up with a twin. And what do you do with those pieces? Well, I had a couple of pieces that were left over from a holiday project that I had done. So lots of red and green, but tone on tone prints, nothing very exciting about it, but it was too much to just discard. Mm-hmm. And so the last lesson of the article that we did was, you know, you have these tone on tone or what some people would think of as more nitsy prints, not really a star in the bunch. What do you do with them?
Mm-hmm.
Our inclination as quilters is often to take them to the quilt store and to try to find that one really wow print that can tie it together that has red and green in it.
Yeah.
And I go back to that discussion we had earlier about the cocktail party. If there's one really loud person, mm-hmm. doesn't always work. So Week's suggestion was not to find that one giant print that ties it together, but to really focus on the feeling and the mood of those prints, as I said, was sort of a tone on tone or a small print. And so we pulled out other colors. The common thing in doing this that you want to avoid is sort of that rainbow look. You don't want it to look like a crayon box mm-hmm. of I just picked red, green, blue, yellow, black.
Right.
You know, but she added together a variety of prints, and some of them were checks, some of them were sort of mottled look, some of them were small tone on tones, and some had a little bit of contrast with them. But whether they were batiks, cottons, wovens, we looked at the scale of the prints. And then we looked for adding unsaturated grays and kind of gray browns to this mix. And that was the feeling of the original two prints.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go for red browns. And again, this is sort of a subtle thing, but when you see these in the printout, and again, you can go to allpeoplequilt.com/stashrx and print it out, and you'll see that there's sort of a tone of saturated color in these that all matches. And if you wear glasses and can take your glasses off, you'll often see the one print that stands out. But mm-hmm. if you can't, you know, you have the red ruby beholder kind of thing. There are some tools at the quilt shop.
Take photos, too.
Photos with your digital camera.
Yeah, on your phone.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can kind of pull out the one that you're mm-hmm. like, this one doesn't really fit in. Mm-hmm. And even if you can't articulate what it is about it that doesn't work, that's a great way, taking a camera photo, to do that. but adding a mix of dark to light and contrast. And we came up with a sort of a beautiful mix of things, and you'll get to see a color option also made out of those.
Yeah, that's
as
what I was
well.
Just going to ask. So you made a quilt or two out of what was going on here?
Right. There are five of them.
Wow.
That we put together from these different collections of fabrics that we came up with. So it wasn't just a lesson in theory. It was really one in practice. And in that article, you'll get to see, and throughout that issue, those color options made with patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting magazine into actual quilt options. And you can see how the colors work together. Now, the scariest part of this whole day to me was, you know, Weeks kind of walked me through my stash and finding other things and explaining it. And I wrote the article and was able to articulate her thoughts. But at the end of the day, there were, you know, the dregs of my stash left,
right,
like the things she hadn't picked.
Right.
And at that point, she said, now I want you to pick. And she pulled five things out of what remained and said, now you go pick things to go with this to make it a quilt. And again, she handed me this stash of four fabrics that I would never have thought to put together in a quilt. I would have thought they were all sort of onesies or twosies in my stash. And so I took those four fabrics and I went out into the quilt shop and I thought, wow, if I blow this, you know, I will not be a very good pupil. So I could write about it. Could I really put it into action? But Weeks was a great teacher. And so I took it out and I made a palette of it. And I really thought about bridging the differences in colors because what she gave me had some sort of limey greens and then a little bit of olivey green in it as well. And a navy blue, which I am sometimes allergic to blue, so I don't know what got me into this piece in my stash that had a navy blue background. But I took them out and I put them together. And I did sort of incorporate the lessons of looking at the salvage and trying to find colors that were a step up or a step below and trying not to just mediate it with all tone on tones, but add some other big prints or some bold things in with it. And the lesson that I learned from my first effort, and again, we put together a slideshow of my lesson alone. So at allpeoplequilt.com/757, just the number 757 at the end, you can see this stash RX slideshow of my lesson. But what I learned from it was on my first attempt, when I pulled all the fabrics together, I sort of went with an equal mix. I had blues, I had greens, and I had purples. And I pulled them together and I stacked them up on the cutting table at the shop. And I looked at it and they all went together. I mean, I did pretty well with the color thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I missed on was the balance of things. So I had to back off. And Week's advice there was, we're often taught that things in equal measure or equal proportion are pleasing in a room setting or in what you're wearing. But again, like a great accessory, too much can be too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to back off of my assortment and go mostly with a blue and green palette.
Okay.
And then add a little bit of purple, but cut back and pull away some of the purples that I had added. Because the one-third, your eye didn't really know what you were to focus on, if
was
that
it,
makes sense.
Was it real tonal also? Did that pulling any out?
It wasn't really tonal. It was just that the purple was too heavy in the mix overall. And it was so balanced that nothing was more interesting than anything else. So actually by taking away some of the purple that was a little bit more saturated in color than the other two, it gave it a great pop. And I liken that to a great outfit that you're wearing when you have that scarf on that people are like, oh my gosh, that's a perfect scarf. Well, you've sort of set the background for that scarf to pop off your outfit or that great piece of jewelry. That's how this mix went for me. It created a better background by having a balance of greens and blues and just adding that punch of purple to it.
Now, did you play around with maybe taking one of the other colors away and leaving?
I did, and you could just tell instantly by looking at the pile that it was like, yeah, that's not right. And some of that, and I think the other thing to remember in the big scheme of things, I mean, as I said, we talked about doing this story for a long time because we know quilters have fabrics, and to a person, I've not met a quilter yet who doesn't say, what was I thinking, or I don't know why I like this, or I don't know what to do
with
this.
Yeah.
And it is a personal preference. It is what you like. It is the combination that you like. And we've talked before about, you know, there aren't colors that go together or don't go together. Mm-hmm. There are colors that you like together
right.
or I like together.
Mm-hmm.
So do what makes you happy. But if you're not happy with the mix you've got, reading an article like this can help you sort of figure out what some rules of color are and not thinking about it in terms of color theory or
right.
art, but just why do these things work together? Or how do I put them together? Or what could I think about adding to this mix that would make this a pleasing quilt to me?
Yeah, I think this is like a plan. So you've sort of, you know, worked with Weeks. She shared a plan.
Right.
And then you wrote up the article to help give everybody else a peek at that plan.
Right.
And tools, a new tool set. Great. This is just wonderful. Now I have to go play around with my fabric.
I know. It made me want to go home and get another 40 pounds
right.
of stash
right.
out and make more quilts.
There we go. Well, thank you, Jennifer. This has been wonderful.
You're welcome.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Now, I have to tell you, when I saw Valerie Goodwin's book, Art Quilt Maps, it was like one of those moments like I went like, this is really, really interesting. I love maps. And of course, I love quilts. But to see the book, the cover is very intriguing. It's very linear. And I'm like, wow, I really want to know what this is all about. So, of course, I flipping through it and I thought, okay, this is really neat stuff. I've got to have Valerie come on and tell us how she puts all the magic in this book. So, Valerie, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, you know, you are an architect, you're a professor at Florida A&M University. How did you find quilt making?
Well, I actually learned to sew at a very young age. My grandmother, who lived in Alabama, mm-hmm. we would go and see her every summer, and she was a home ec teacher.
Oh.
And she's the one who taught me to sew. And I'm the eldest of four girls, and once she showed me how to sew, all my sisters and I had matching sets of clothes made by me.
Ah, you became the seamstress of the family, huh?
I became the seamstress, and we would go back up to Connecticut, and followed by some fabric that my grandmother had, and I would get to sewing. But actually, I stopped sewing when I hit high school because it wasn't cool anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pick it up again until 1998, and that was actually because of teaching architecture.
Oh.
I was reading a magazine. It's called the Journal of Architectural Education.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a female professor who talked about a project that she did with her junior level students.
Mm-hmm.
They examined traditional quilt blocks, like flying geese and so on. And they used them as diagrams to teach the students about design, but also diagrams for laying out a building, which became the genesis for a quilt museum that the students designed.
Oh, wow.
And that just intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was teaching freshman design, and that's where you really get down to the nitty-gritty of design basics.
Mm-hmm.
And I used quilt blocks as a way of teaching them about color and shape and pattern and all those good things. And as a result of that, I decided I was going to learn how to quilt.
Oh, cool.
Because it became a very popular studio exercise.
Uh-huh.
So I took a class in 1998.
So did you start out making traditional blocks, since that's sort of, you know, how you got kick-started into it?
Yes, the first class that I took was at a local community college, and mm-hmm. we all made a sample quilt all mm-hmm. by hand. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned to do. And so at first I learned traditional quilting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because you always have to learn the basics, but I always knew that I wanted to do something more with it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I took a class where I learned about fabric collage.
Ah.
And that was really freeing. And
yes.
it allowed me to be more expressive and be a lot looser.
I'm just so excited about these map quilts, because they're maps, but they're not. The collage, when you said the word collage, it's like, oh, that just is perfect. How did you start coming up with the idea of the work in this book?
It's an evolution of wanting to express my love of architecture, my love of maps, my love of art, and looking at aerial views. And so it's been kind of a step-by-step journey that led to the book.
So you've sort of been working in series then, sort of evolving the style?
Yes, exactly.
Ah,
it developed over time. Mm-hmm. I also use paint in the work, too, to give it a kind of a painterly background.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the background on my quilts as being like the earth's surface. And then you put the map elements on top of that surface. And so that's how I conceptually think about the process of what I'm doing and what I'm creating.
So do you sketch these out in advance, like to have a little guide, or do you just sort of create as you go?
I work both ways.
Oh.
In being an architect, you start with conceptual drawings that are really small, and as it gets more and more developed, your drawings get bigger,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, it's a very linear process. So the more you know about what you're doing, the more detailed the drawings get. And then my drawings used to be, my work, I used to try and follow more or less what was in the drawing, because
mm-hmm.
that's what we're used to doing. By the time you get to construction documents, for instance, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a contractual thing and you really can't change it.
Right.
But with my work, I allow it to just keep speaking to me. And so
mm-hmm.
I change it as the ideas progress.
How big are the quilts, Valerie?
Many of my quilts range from about 3 feet to 4 feet wide by up to 4 to 5 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
But I also work small.
Mm-hmm.
So
big or small, no in between.
Well, that's not that big.
Yeah,
work much bigger.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about your process, and you know how you layer and build these the designs. Can you just give us a few like sort of step outs of what you do?
Sure. I start with a surface that will allow my work to, it's like an interfacing. I use something that's called crinoline.
Okay.
And it's kind of like if you know what buckram is,
mm-hmm.
it's not quite as stiff as buckram, but it's a little bit lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I layer the quilt, the pieces of fabric on top. And the layering process involves not only the fabric and thread that sewn that's done with the sewing machine, but I also add detail to the earth surface by hand, and then I paint until I have a subtle but rich background.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, that's where I start to add the lines and shapes.
Yeah,
and
I love how mm-hmm. there's places where there's like a river and you've taken and stitched like the river and then you've painted it and then you write on it. It's just like so
yeah,
interesting.
It's got lots of layers in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes I wish that I could make my work a lot simpler, but it's just something about my style that it always has a lot of lines and shapes in it.
Now, do any of your pieces that you're doing now, do they actually mimic a particular map, or are they more like inspired by a location?
Sometimes I'm inspired by a particular location, and sometimes it's just imaginary places. I go back and forth between the two.
Okay. All right. I like the I don't know if it's called Stonehenge, but you've done one that is, you know, got the rocks and the formation.
Yeah.
What made you come up with that one?
That site has always intrigued me. I've never been there.
Mm-hmm.
But something about the power of the circle and kind of the majesty and the simplicity of the stones that are just set around a circular shape. I'm just drawn to that.
And yeah, I think it's sort of mysterious, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And if you look at some of my other quilts that are of imaginary places, you can see a few, you can see that I repeat my love of the circle in some of my work,
mm-hmm.
even though it's not quite as simple as what you see in the Stonehenge quilt.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book has got just phenomenal step outs and directions. I just love that. You did a really, really good job.
Well, thank you. My husband was very helpful.
Ah.
He loves photography, and he and I really bonded over, I guess it was two summers ago, and I would do part, and he would drop by, and he would take a picture, and then he would go off, and I would do the next step, and he'd come mm-hmm. back, and he'd take the picture. So it was a nice way for us to connect.
And it's also, you know, that's really wonderful because of the memories. Now, you have a memory with him in here, and the memories of,
mm-hmm.
yeah, just a whole big, circle of things. I like also the section where you bring in things like pictures of the home, picture of your family, and then you put that with a map. That's something that I think a lot of people could really relate to.
Yeah, I would like one day to, I'm thinking about formulating a class that is just about making memory maps of things that, places and people that are important to themselves. And I really did enjoy doing that piece because I connected with my mother. She's the one who went through and she found some of the old photographs, and we had some nice discussions about my grandmother and the old house and so on. So not only does it commemorate and document something, it was just a process of speaking with my mom and trying to get her to recount her memories. That was a really great experience for me.
You know, I love that idea. You know, I might have to do something like that, Valerie. That just, because the homes are gone over time, and it's just a great mm-hmm. recollection. Oh, you know, Valerie, this has been wonderful to have you on the show and talk about your quilts.
Well, thank you so much.
Now, everybody can visit
you. Asking me.
Oh, they can, you know, and they can visit you. You're online. You have a website, quiltsbyvalerie.com.
That's correct.
Yeah, and do you actually sell some of your pieces?
I don't do much online sales. I do some sales through galleries, but if people are interested, just drop me a line.
Drop you a line, and I'm going to wait for that class that you design. So, thank you.
Okay. All right, Pat.
Have a good day.
All right, I enjoyed it. Okay, bye-bye.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are just done for the day. It's been an awesome show, and I hope you'll come back next week when we have all new guests, and visit American Patchwork and Quilting online at allpeoplequilt.com. You can come visit me at patsloan.com, and we'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.